Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, happy new year and welcome to another episode of Test Talks. It's the first for 2015. I'm your host, Joe, from joecalantonio.com. And today, I'm really excited because we'll be talking with Janet Gregory, co-author of some of the most popular agile testing books out there today. But first, if you really want to start your testing off right in 2015, make sure to check out our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. Before we get into the interview with Janet, I want to share with you a cool little Chrome add-in by Goiko Adzit that can help you with exploratory testing. And this kind of ties in with Janet's interview. In Lisa Crispin and Janet Gregory's book, Agile Testing, they talk a lot about one of the benefits of automated regression tests and other tedious tasks is that it helps free up the team for more important things like exploratory testing. But just because something is an exploratory test doesn't mean that pieces of your workflow can't be automated. Bug Magnet allows you to right-click on any field in a Chrome browser and then choose some of the most common problematic values and edge cases from its menu option. This is awesome because it will save you time and also serve as a reminder as the type of things that usually cause issues with data input. So once you install Bug Magnet, when you right-click on a text field within your application within Chrome, there's now a menu option called Bug Magnet. If you go to that Bug Magnet menu option, you have things like names. So it adds common names with apostrophes, double quotes, some Chinese characters, has email addresses. So you could try valid, invalid email addresses, numbers. So it has negative numbers, positive numbers, long numbers, white space. So you can add tabs, new line, leading spaces. You can even use certain exploits like SQL injection and HTML parsing and broken HTML. So this is all within this cool menu option of Bug Magnet where you just right-click on that text box and then choose one of these particular values and it will enter it for you automatically and allow you to test all these different kinds of common issues. So definitely check that out. I have a link to that within the show notes at testtalks.com/34. On with the interview. So this episode is for anyone that wants to start their agile testing efforts off right in 2015. Janet shares with us a bunch of great agile tips and tricks to help anyone either trying to improve their current agile testing efforts or anyone that wants to start off their new 2015 testing projects using some solid agile testing good practices. So check it out. Hey, Janet, welcome to Test Talks.
Thanks, Joe. I'm glad to be here.
Awesome. So before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, let's see. What can I tell you about myself that everybody doesn't already know? I live in Calgary, which is in Western Canada, fairly close to the mountains. I've been working with agile teams for quite a long time. For a long time, I was working embedded, I guess would be the best way to call it, working with teams, trying to help them transition. And since our first book, Lisa's and my first book came out, I've been doing a lot more training, coaching, that type of thing on shorter term kind of contracts. So I get to see a lot more people, a lot more different types of teams. In between doing that, I'm kind of a homebody. I like to spend a lot of time with my family, my grandchildren. That's probably as much as people need to know.
So your first book, Agile Testing, A Practical Guide for Testers and Agile Teams, was released in 2009. Why did you feel like you had to write more agile testing?
Well, the publisher actually came back to us and said, you know, it's been 5 years. Do you think you need a second edition to that book? And we looked at it. Lisa and I both took and we looked at the book. We went through it and we said, no, we do not need a second edition. Everything in here is still valid and correct. Some of the wording and some of the language has moved on since then. But the basic principles, there's still nothing wrong with them. So we decided we didn't need to do a second edition. But there was a lot of things we had learned since then. So we, you know, proposed that back to the publisher and said, you know, we'd like to do this. And we thought about a lot of different things. Some of the vocabulary that changed since the first book is things like acceptance test-driven development, specification by example. Even behavioral driven development was just starting to come out at that point in time. So there was a lot of language changes. We also had learned quite a few other things along the way, and we just wanted to share what we learned.
Excellent. So I guess before we really jump into it, in a nutshell, how would you describe what agile testing is?
Well, there's a couple of different ways to look at it. It could be the most common way of thinking about it is testing on an agile team, testing on an agile project, though I don't particularly like that word, but working with the fast iterations. So that's the normal term. The other way of looking at it is, how can I make my testing more agile? How can I put what I learned from that piece into what I'm testing in traditional teams, right? Just applying the agility to a traditional project. That's not so much what people mean when they think about agile testing, though. It's testing on teams that are practicing agile.
Speaking about testing on teams, is there a way to get everyone involved in testing? How do we make it so agile testing really is a more of a culture rather than something that we just pay lip service to and we just have one person end up doing it on a scrum team?
Right. And that is the hard part, because it is truly a mindset. It's not, and it's a mindset of the that, say, if you have a tester role on the team, how they approach their testing, but also the whole team, the delivery team, as I, you know, the team that's responsible for delivering a feature. And when I teach my courses, for example, we call it the whole team approach, because I really want everybody on the team to understand how much testing is involved. It's not, and I'll, this is in quotations, only testing the software after it's been delivered to the tester, right? But it's about testing ideas, testing assumptions, getting fast feedback all the way through. And to get that whole team thinking about testing, you really have to raise the awareness. You have to start making testing visible. You have to start being able to talk about what does testing mean. And that was one of the reasons we introduced the agile testing quadrants in the first place, was when Brian Merrick first introduced it, we thought it was a great way of showing the team, the organization, the types of testing that need to be thought of, right? So it's really about making it visible, and that means talking about it, being able to understand what types of testing you need to have.
Awesome. So for the people that aren't aware, what is the agile quadrant?
The agile testing quadrants. So, you know, there's two different sides. When you look at any kind of quadrant picture, right, you have two sides. The one on the vertical dimension is, in our case, we have on the left-hand side, guiding development, tests that guide development. On the right-hand side would be the tests that critique the product, that evaluate it. I can look at it, I can feel it, I can touch it. How are you evaluating it? How are you critiquing it? The top and bottom halves, we divided that up into business facing, which just means tests that I could have my business users look at and they would understand the tests. You know, I would say if I was doing something simple like a login, I'm testing, you know, username Janet Gregory, password 123, that would be a valid case, right? So I'm testing valid. I could use examples with Janet Gregory and an invalid password, which might be something that's too short, for example. But those are business facing. The business users would be able to see that and know exactly what I was testing. The technical facing, which is the bottom half, would be tests that are more technical language, that the business cares about the result, but would never be able to go look at the tests and see what they're testing, understand what they're testing. So we have these four quadrants, and we've numbered them 1 to 4, surprisingly. And it's not about when you do them or anything else. It's just ease of use, because you've got these four quadrants, and the lower left quadrant would be technical facing tests that guide development. Too long, too hard to say all the time. So we say quadrant one. Those are, most of the time we think about those as unit tests, the developer tests, right? The ones that the programmers do. Quadrant two, which is really what is different about Agile, is the business facing tests that guide development. Writing tests first. What can we do? What can we test before we start coding? And this whole left-hand side is really about preventing defects, right? So when we get into quadrant three and four and we're critiquing, that's about finding defects, right? And the difference between three and four is business-facing. So things like exploratory testing or user acceptance testing. And, you know, quadrant four is the technical ones, which is load, performance, security, right? Business users care about it, but they would never look at those and understand what the tests did.
Cool. So this quadrant, I think this is a really great concept, but sometimes I feel overwhelmed, especially for Scrum teams when they have a definition of done that their tests all need to be automated near the end. And then they look at this quadrant and they're like, oh my gosh, look at all these tests we haven't done. For example, I think in the book you brought up how quadrant four is sometimes ignored, like performance testing, load testing, security testing. So I guess my question is, how do we become more efficient, I guess, with this quadrant? How do we include more tests but have enough time to do all those tests, I guess?
Right. So I think part of the way, and in the second book we've tried to explain this, because this is one of the things we realized people struggled with, is that if we start thinking in layers, levels of detail, precision, right? So at a story level, what can we test at that story level to make that story to done? But if we start thinking at a higher level, we have the idea of a feature. A feature has many stories. The feature is what the business user really, really cares about. That's what will add the biggest value. So perhaps some of those tests from the quadrants belong at the story level to get it to done. But perhaps some of the other tests, and this is where a lot of times when we're thinking about load and performance, they actually belong at the feature level, not necessarily at every story level. Doesn't make sense to do it at each story. But when we first start talking about any feature, and this, it's really important for that whole team to be part of that conversation, to be part of dividing that feature into stories, to say, you know, we have to think about security, we have to think about performance or load, or what's really important to your team, to your application, right? It might be disaster recovery. How are we going to fit that in? How are we going to think about it while we're coding, right? Because we do have to think about it. It's not an after fact. We have to think about it while we're coding. So when we start thinking about it early in those conversations and bringing up that performance is really important or disaster recovery, we can figure out as a team, where are we going to test them? How are we going to test them? What kind of hooks do we have to put in the code to make it even testable? So when we start thinking about these layers, you know, story level, feature level, system level, then we provide this framework, and I don't like that word particularly, but to be able to talk about the different kinds of testing we need and bringing it in right from the very beginning, right? It's really hard to test, to say, run a security test before the code is written. But if we're aware of it, we can start putting the necessary information right in the code to help us along the way.
If I'm a tester on an Agile team, do I need to be a programmer in order to perform these tests? Or am I more of like I'm herding people to do all these activities?
I don't think I like either of those particular conversations, but that's okay. That's probably one of my second most question I get asked, right? And do I have to be a programmer if I'm a tester? And I'm going to say, no, you don't have to be. Do programming skills help you as a tester? Absolutely, no question. But I heard a term several years ago, a friend of mine, Lynn McKee, and she said the word or phrase, technical awareness. And it's something that really stuck with me because I think that's what we need testers to do. They need to be technically aware. And that will mean different things to different teams. If our team is really understanding that whole team approach, then the coding of the tests, for example, if we were doing automation, we can share that job. I can collaborate with the programmer whose life is programming and really good at it. And if our tests are written in the language that they will help with, then I will collaborate with them. I will work with them. We will define the tests. But the actual coding, they can do, you know, 5 times faster, 10 times faster than I can. I mean, I have a programming background. I do from years ago. But it's not my strength anymore. I would really struggle with it. So something that would take me an hour, I know that the programmers would take like 5 minutes or 10 minutes because they live and breathe that. So I think the collaboration with the team is what's critical. But the tester has to be able to understand and be able to have a conversation with that programmer. So do I need to know how to program? No. Do I need to understand a programming language to be able to have that conversation? Yes. And as testers, we're advocates for testing. So part of that is, and this is where I think that you were talking about herding, but part of our role kind of thing would be to advocate that testing and constantly be talking about it and advocate quality, even though it is the team's responsibility.
And this is actually something that I struggle with on my teams. For some reason, it's almost anytime someone hears test, they automatically assume that's not me. But then someone brought to my attention that we're probably not really doing Agile. We're just doing Scrum, saying we're doing Agile. I guess if we were really doing Agile, I guess more developers may be used to doing test-driven development and more open to it. I don't know if that's something you've seen a lot of, or is that why, when I read your books and articles, collaboration is something that comes up a lot. So is that one way that we kind of get over this kind of mindset with collaboration?
Yeah, I think so. It's just raising that awareness that we all have a responsibility, right? So to me, Agile is an umbrella term talking about, you know, delivering business value in short time kind of frames, or regular intervals, as Elizabeth Hendrickson calls it. Scrum is very much a project management kind of framework. How do we get the business requirements into our development environment? I firmly believe, and I would really like every team I ever work with to embrace, I don't care whether they use Scrum or Kanban or any other version of that, but also really taking into account the principles from, say, extreme programming. How to do good coding? How do we get that happening, like TDD, test-driven development, right? But bringing in practices like acceptance test-driven development or behavioral-driven development or specification by example, which are all basically the same idea. It's, you know, guiding development with examples from a business perspective. That doesn't belong to that practices. Those practices don't belong to any one method or anything else. I could probably put those practices into a waterfall project. It's just a good way of working, of knowing what we're going to build, right? And so when the team really thinks about that, they bring those practices into play and they adopt them. Methods like Scrum is really about the requirements. It doesn't tell you how to develop software.
So I guess this also would help with it's called mini waterfall almost, that people, they're in a Scrum, they have a sprint, and the end of the sprint, it's almost like a accelerating the waterfall process almost.
Yeah, we call it the mini waterfall. There's a lot of names out there for it. Some I won't repeat, but but yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's when the team, and usually kind of the programmers, don't understand that by really thinking about the stories as a team and what it means to get it to done, getting testable stories, being able to test them in small increments. A lot of times we think about stories and you hear it's got to fit into an iteration. So if my iteration is 2 weeks long, they'll go, okay, let's work at this for, you know, 9 days and deliver it to the tester on day 9. But if you've got 5 programmers all doing that, you end up with that many waterfall. The benefits of doing Agile are missed because you're not getting fast feedback. You're not being able to work at a sustainable pace. Sustainable pace means for the whole team, not just the programmers, right? So we really need to be looking at that, the bigger picture. And a lot of times when we see the mini waterfalls, it's truly because the stories are not testable, the stories are too big, the stories aren't, you know, like it goes back that place.
Sounds like the foundations really aren't there in place yet.
Exactly. That's exactly.
So if someone's starting off an Agile project in the new year, what are the foundations that they need for better Agile practices?
Right. So, you know, it's kind of hard to pinpoint one thing, but if we kind of go back to that last question, right, the idea of testable stories is a really big part of it. How do we get testable stories? By using things like acceptance test-driven development. I tell people to get to do, say, acceptance test-driven development, if you start talking about examples and you have one example of the different kinds of behaviors you expect out of the story, so you have an expected behavior. What is the happy path, that expected? What are the misbehaviors, the what-if questions? You know, what if this happens? What do we expect our application to do? So if you start talking about those and get those examples, I find a really good rule of thumb that works for me and I've had success with is if I have more than one expected behavior, I probably need more than one story. So it's a kind of an easy way to think about that. And it kind of just helps you break those down into testable stories. So the first thing I ask is, how do I test that? And by using something like acceptance test-driven development to get those examples out, it's the conversation that happens is probably one of the most powerful things. Rather than stopping and fixing the symptoms, we're not getting our stories done in an iteration, so let's make our iteration longer. That's solving the wrong thing, is learning what the real problem is and going back there and solving that.
So in your experience, you think something like behavior-driven development could help a team maybe get that collaboration going and build in that testability?
Absolutely. Whether they use behavioral-driven development, and that's usually thinking about specific tools, but using the given when then formula is a really good way to start thinking about that. But you don't necessarily even have to use that format. I find it a good way to do it, but I can do it in, so if I was having something that had a lot of calculations, I might just go strictly to a tabular format rather than going the given when then, just saying, here's a bunch of examples to show the different types of behavior. But defining those, quote, real examples, saying, I'm logging in, so I want Janet Gregory as a username. I want password. And showing the real examples is where the power becomes, because then you eliminate any misinterpretation.
Cool. So once we have all these examples, do we automate all of them, or do we? Is that just a springboard to start discussing testing, but not necessarily saying all these shall be automated?
Yeah, I think the automation is a whole kind of a conversation on itself, because it would depend on the application that I was doing. So, for example, if I was doing a heart monitor, I would probably include each and every single example we ever thought about in my automation, because it must work all the time. But if I'm doing, say, a web page and it's not life-threatening, it's not critical, let's take my own web page, right? I might take and automate things for that iteration, but at the end of the iteration or when my feature was complete, I would probably go through and say, here's a representative amount, and that's what would go into my regression suite. So I might automate them all if it was fairly simple and cost effective until that feature was done, but then I would extract the most important tests that I wanted to go forward for my regression suite.
I always find that to be a difficult conversation, though, sometimes with managers. We're going to automate everything. It's like, well, I understand we want to automate as much as possible. We want to automate the right things. We want to automate it in a smart way, I think.
Yeah, and that's where we start coming back to that term technical awareness. Mm-hmm. Part of that is being able to articulate the benefits or the costs of things like automation. if we can't articulate those things, it makes it really hard to go back to the manager and say, hey, this is why we need to do this.
I guess on the flip side, are there any dangers to putting off test automation?
Dangers to putting off test automation? I would say yes, yes, and yes. And I've gone on record of saying that I do not believe that an agile team is sustainable over time if you do not have some kind of automation. And it might be just really good unit tests. But you have to have something because you want that fast feedback. Everything changes so fast that unless we have that safety net of the regression suite running every day, every day, every day, we really don't know what we broke. And so I think it's really dangerous over time. It doesn't happen overnight, but if we think we can get away without any automation, I don't think it's sustainable because we keep adding more stuff.
I guess that goes back again to your concept of technical awareness, because I guess when someone also hears automation, they automatically think UI tests, but you just brought up unit test. So maybe, you know, it's 100% automation, but it's not all 100% UI automation. It's maybe most of it unit testing. And then we go through what, you know, that famous test pyramid with the unit integration and the UI test.
Right. And it's really thinking about the purpose of the test, right? At the unit test level, which is that lowest base of that pyramid, we're looking at really small pieces. It's the internal code quality of, you know, the code. Are we making sure that our methods work correctly? It's not necessarily about the business itself. So that middle layer is, you called it the integration test. But what are the real business rules? And you can test most of those business rules not through the user interface, but through that API level, which then allows us to get faster feedback, right? Because it runs faster if we can avoid either database access and the UI. It means faster feedback. So it's coming back to that whole return on investment, right? If we can run them faster, it means we get faster feedback. And then we can go through the user interface and have maybe a minimal coverage to do, say, the valid workflow. Maybe that's enough to do through the user interface. But understanding where the tests are, what they are, really plays an important part to deciding how you're going to automate. And it's a conversation the team needs to have.
You know, you have a great section of this within your book, The Dangers of Putting Off Test Automation. And there's a really great example. I don't know if we want to talk to it or just make people buy the book to find it out, because I thought it was the legend of the test automation volcano, I thought was hilarious.
Oh, it's lovely. And our illustrator did such a great job.
Yeah.
Every time I look at it, I burst out laughing. We got that from Matt Barcombe. He had drawn the original picture and we made it prettier. But the idea is that if we don't use the whole team and talk about it on this picture, if you can envision this, you've got the programmers sitting under the sun, under umbrellas, you know, having their drinks, and the testers are slaving away at their manual testing and doing all this, and they're down in the lava pits, right? But eventually it explodes. You just can't keep up. And so this little fable thing is that volcano explodes and, you know, the lava comes down and kind of overflows onto those programmers, right? So eventually everybody pays for it. And I kind of, you know, you sit there and you go, you know, let's pay me now, little chunks at a time, and let's do this, or it's just going to explode and we're all going to pay for it over, you know, in a much bigger way. And it's that whole fable. I encourage you to read it. It's much better than the book. Or talk to Matt Barcombe, because he tells that story really, really well. But it's the idea is we can't afford that technical debt. We can't afford not to automate as we go. And so a lot of teams go, it's too much, it's too much. But think about it in small chunks. Take the agile principles, simplicity, small chunks. What can you start today? And slowly just eat away at that, right? Start getting it going. And that's the only way it really does work. It doesn't work if you make it big bang. You have to do it. And starting today.
I was going to say, just that example alone is worth the price of the book, I think.
Excellent. Go buy the book, yeah.
So I was also watching some videos on YouTube, and I found one with you and Lisa talking about the myths about agile testing. Debunked. So can you give us what the number one agile testing myth is that you find in your experience?
One of the things that I know we tried to do in that, and we did that a couple of years ago, is that, you know, agile allows us to go better, faster, quicker. And it does those things, but it's a side effect. We get faster because we're building in the automation. We get faster because we're doing it better. We're not doing rework. And those are the things that come as a byproduct. So we try not to, don't focus on that as the goal. Focus on getting good quality. Focus on building the right thing. And the rest comes with it. So that's kind of a myth from the agile perspective. From the testing perspective, the first one was testing is dead. Testing is not dead. And the idea that acceptance test-driven development only confirms behavior, right? And the idea of talking about real examples, that's what that came from, that we're only doing confirmatory kind of behavior. But when you start asking questions and having the conversation, and that's what's important, then that's where the questions come out. And you start saying, what do you think about this? What are the risks? So if I ask a question like, what's the best thing that can happen or what's the worst that can happen? All of a sudden, that gives us a place to put a testing charter in for an exploratory test session. So we want to be able to think about those things too. It's the conversation that we really want to be doing. Yeah, that the fifth one was agile equals speed, which is that first one I started talking about. And a lot of times we get the idea that agile teams are dazzled by tools. And unfortunately, that is the case. But in some instances, because they think we have to go do the tool. But the best agile teams I've worked with are the ones that figure out their process first and then figure out the tool that matches their process. What do they really need? And the tools sometimes can be the most simple tools there are, you know, like a physical story. There's a lot of things that frighten people, and things like testers must program. They hear that, or you'll hear a company that says, we're only hiring programmers for testers, or testers that can program. And that frightens a lot of people. And then it gets into this great big overblown kind of thing that testers must be able to program. And then, you know, you get 100 testers quitting when that's not the case at all. It's sad.
Absolutely. I think it's really common, though. I've been seeing a lot of that also. We don't hire manual testers now. We're hiring devs and tests is almost what I've been seeing a lot more of.
And I think that organizations that think that way may run into trouble because they don't have somebody thinking from the customer perspective, which is what a tester does, right? They're thinking from the customer perspective. There are teams that work perfectly fine without a tester. But I think that most teams can benefit from them.
There's an exhaustive list of recommended books and courses in the back of the book. But are there one or two that you would recommend everyone that's doing Agile needs to read?
So from a testing perspective, the number one book that I'm kind of recommending these days, one of them being Explore It from Elizabeth Hendrickson, from the exploratory testing perspective. She really gives some good examples about how programmers can explore when they're coding, you know, the testers as well, but it's very, very good. There's practical books like the one Marcus Gardner wrote, which was Acceptance Test-Driven Development by Example. He walks you through from a coding perspective. So you can realize maybe it's not as scary as I thought it was. One of the books I'm reading now, which is a really nice little book, nothing specifically to do with test design or anything else, but has to do with splitting stories, is by Goiko Adzik, and it's 50 Quick Ideas to Improve Your User Stories. He's given some really good examples of how to make your stories more testable. So I think sometimes we have to step outside our testing box and to kind of really start thinking about how do we make things easier for us. And one of the things I've noticed over the years is if you have good testable stories, much of the testing will come a lot easier to us. And sometimes the understanding complicated test design, well, it becomes less important because we're thinking in such smaller chunks that it's just It's simpler, right? As long as we have that tool belt, as such, or the toolbox full of tools that we can ask the questions about security or those other things. So there's a few good books out there that can help.
Awesome. So, Janet, before we go, is there one piece of actionable advice you can give someone to improve their agile testing efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you.
Actionable, I would say, is really starting to get the whole team to solve testing problems. So instead of saying this is a testing problem and this is my problem, use those retrospectives to say, hey, we have this testing, we have this problem, how are we going to solve it? And then learning to use the five whys, why is this happening, to get to the real problem to solve it. But using that team, I think, is bring it back to the team. And sometimes it takes a lot of going back again and again to get the team to really realize. But asking that, constantly bringing it back to the team. How you can get a hold of me? My email is the best way, because I get email just about every time when I travel. Sometimes it's easier than others. My email address is janet@agiletester.ca. The CA for Canada. So that's the easiest way to get a hold of me, and I welcome emails. I really do. Or, you know, tweet. My Twitter ID is JanetGregoryCA.
Thanks again, Janet, for your testing agile awesomeness. I think you set the bar really high for Test Talks in 2015 and look forward to speaking with you again. Before we go, I just want to give a special shout out to Dev Bige and David Sykes for their 5-star review in iTunes. I really appreciate your feedback, and based on all the feedback, I hope to make Test Talks even better in 2015. So if you have any feedback or if you'd like to leave a review, head on over to iTunes and give us a hopefully 5-star review, leave some feedback, or drop me a line at joe@testtalks.com. And remember, for links to everything of value that we talked about in today's episode, head on over to testtalks.com/34. And while you're there, make sure to check out the more info link for our sponsor, Sauce Labs, to learn about their awesome products and services. I also redesigned the Test Talks website, so I'd love to hear what you think. If you have any feedback or improvements, once again, just drop me a line at joe@testtalks.com. So that's it for today's episode. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.